Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of American Criminal. In our latest season, the child of Italian immigrants sets out to achieve the American dream. And if he has to spill some blood along the way, so be it. Listen to American Criminal, Al Capone, wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get ad-free access to the entire season first, subscribe at IntoHistory.com.
Welcome to the OC Bitches, everybody.
Welcome to the OC Bitches.
We're still in season one, but you know what? We're on episode 27.
Oh my gosh.
Can you believe we did 27 episodes?
I don't know how you are sitting here.
Am I not supposed to talk yet?
No, you're not, but that's okay. No,
I'll say quietly.
Sneak peek. You know, you don't need an introduction anyways. Does anyone recognize the voice? Well, you might recognize the face if you're watching. Mr. Josh Schwartz returns.
I told you I'd be back.
He's back. He's back.
Whether you like it or not.
Our first episode, and you were asking if we've improved. I would like to think that we've improved. And also, for everyone just listening, we are actually in a studio together in Hollywood for the first time. We've been doing this remotely. And honestly, I realize that, you know, we miss a few things. So I don't hear everything when it's remote. So it's nice to see your face and have a proximity that's closer. It's more intimate.
Rachel, is this your first time leaving the house since 2019?
Yes.
Or 2020?
I don't know what sunlight is. It's very interesting today, seeing it for the first time. Thank you for coming back.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
And we have a big episode to go over
today.
We do.
A lot of stuff happens.
A lot of stuff happens. We're at the finale of the first season.
Yeah.
Of the OC.
Yeah. So is this the part where we're ad-libbing?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So yeah, we did 27. It's an insane number. It's an insane number. And it doesn't really happen anymore. Obviously, we're talking about, I don't know if we recorded this, but we were talking about ratings.
Mm-hmm.
And now how ratings have changed, episode counts have changed. I personally don't think I'm capable of running a show that does more than 8 episodes at this point. Maybe 10.
That's interesting.
27 is a young man's game, person's game.
That's how much the industry has changed. We were talking about the fact that this show had a rating of 10.7 million and our top rated was 12.7. And it doesn't need to be that to be successful nowadays, right?
Well, that was the number the night, you know, the night of. And nobody really measures that number anymore.
Right, okay. Right.
They like have watching to do, it look when at it streaming. Airs.
Well, and it's live plus 3, live plus 7, mm-hmm. live plus 30. You know, they have all these different metrics.
What does that mean?
Like 30 days after the show airs, because people now... There was delayed viewing. I think when we were doing this, I believe this was like the advent of the TiVo.
Right.
Do you remember the TiVo?
Oh, good old TiVo.
So, and there was actually an article in, I believe, the Wall Street Journal around season one, maybe it was season two, about the number of college kids who were watching the show in the lobby of their dorms or in their dorm rooms, what have you. And how do you count that number? How do you account for people watching, you know, in groups and on computers? And that was all sort of happening way back in 2004 for the first time.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm here
just to be interesting. Yeah. I don't have to talk about the show.
So when you're only doing 8-10 episodes for a series order, can you do more than, you're working on more than one series?
At a time,
currently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, now you get, in streaming, you get more time to make episodes. Obviously, we were cranking these babies out, you know. This is the old network model, you know, which does still exist. There are, you know, the network still does 22 episode seasons.
Do they? I was going to ask.
Network shows do, yeah.
Like when you did Chuck and you know, things like that.
Yeah, but even today, you know, Dynasty, which we produce, still does 22 episodes. Nancy Drew just did 22 episodes last season. So that model still exists. I'm sure, you know, across, you know, NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox, they're still doing it that way.
Right.
But if you're doing 8 or 10, you end up taking as much time to do 8 or 10 as it took us to do 27.
That's insane.
You're not shooting 8 days per ep.
No, you're getting more days per episode. Maybe not quite as much time, but it's definitely it takes time. It takes time. But it's nice for the actors because you guys obviously would shoot for like 10 months and get like a 6-week, 8-week hiatus, and then be back at it. So now people can kind of shoot in 6 months and then have a few months off, and it's a little more manageable.
27 episodes. Yeah. Yes. We burned through so much storyline. Yes. Before we get into, well, you know.
That'll come.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
But how, I mean, reflecting back, do you remember the overall like mental and physical feelings that the cast and crew were feeling, especially in the writers? Were you just exhausted? Were you looking forward to season two? Like,
it was an adrenaline. I mean, the whole first season was this crazy adrenaline rush. Like we came out of the gate and it just all happened so fast. We were definitely tired. There's probably a part of me that still has not recovered from doing 27 episodes. And then, interestingly enough, I was supposed to write a pilot, which I did write over the hiatus.
Really?
The 3-week hiatus. I was supposed to write another show called Athens that was supposed to air after the OC. So I spent my couple weeks recovering from the 27 episodes writing another show.
So what happened to Athens?
What happened to Athens was we'd never really landed on the concept, I think, that everybody felt that everybody agreed on.
Yeah.
But everybody was like, just go write it, even though we hadn't fully figured it out because we were finishing the show. And I obviously was stretched pretty thin. And then before we knew it, season two was starting and that was its own freight train. So it kind of just was impossible.
Yeah.
So I'd like to have those 3 weeks back where I could have rested.
I was going to say, so your whole hiatus was just 3 weeks and you were writing another script.
Yeah. It was not great. No. But again, I was real young. I was real excited. Very happy to be working. Grateful. The whole first season was just this wild ride. And it's interesting because the show, this episode obviously reflects back on the pilot in a lot of ways. There's a lot of like echoing imagery and, you know, we kind of end where we began in a lot of ways. And the show felt like it kind of like deconstructed itself over the course of the first season. I mean, obviously we did like a parody show of The Valley.
Yeah.
And then, you know, by the end of this season, you know, we kind of took the show apart, which made it challenging to kind of put it back together. This was obviously the first show I did. So this was my first season one cliffhanger. You know, This was the first time of like, how do you end a season in a way that's going to feel compelling to bring people back in season two.
So did you always know when you started the show how it was going to end in the first season?
I would love to say yes. I had no real idea what was going to happen after Tijuana.
Wow.
I had that much of my kind of mapped out.
You know?
And then just very grateful for all the writers. And I remember Bob DeLaurentis in particular, and I spent a lot of time talking about this episode and he talked a lot about this idea of fate and Ryan, you know, his past coming back and sweeping him back out of Newport. And just this idea of like, you can't escape your past. And that's kind of what this episode is about in a lot of ways.
Right. How important was it to, well, I guess you just answered my question. It was really important to have Ryan leave the OC, also break up the core four. Everyone's essentially broken up.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, there were some people who felt like, well, we know he's coming back. We know Seth's coming back. You know, that was the first time I'd really kind of, again, in writing a finale, you're just going for it. You know, we wanted it to be very emotional and dramatic. And there's a personal component we can talk about when we start talking about the music in this episode. But, you know, that idea of even though we know eventually they're going to have to come back, the show is called The OC. It's not called the
Portland,
the Portland, what have you. And we didn't know where Seth was going. And obviously he was on a very small boat. And so he probably wasn't getting to Tahiti. But again, that was something he was talking about in the pilot on the summer breeze, you know? So we really wanted to kind of just tap into the sort of mythology of the show that we had created up to that point.
Yeah.
There was a quote that I read that you said that Stephanie said that this show will, maybe at the beginning of the season, the show is going to change your life.
Yeah. The experience.
The experience is going to change your life. Yeah. And it absolutely did dramatically.
Of course, yeah. I got to say, first of all, kudos to you guys for getting to the end of season one and doing this 27 episodes.
Yeah.
Season four only has 16 episodes, so you'll make it up on the back end, you know, in terms of the length. But A, you guys have done a great job.
Thank you.
And it's been really nice to see the reaction to the show from people. And my parents have never missed an episode.
Really?
Yeah.
Aw. Shout out to Stephen, honey.
Yeah. And they're like, why are you listening? I'm like, because sometimes I feel like I'm attending my own funeral.
What?
Listening to people talk about their experience and all of that.
Yeah.
Albert Brooks style. little curb shout out. But what was I going to say? So you guys have done a great job. And I think one of the other really nice things about this has been putting everybody back in touch.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
I would agree. Yeah. It's been, we've been catching up with everybody. And, you know, we had Brody on.
I'm aware.
And are you? It was interesting to talk to someone.
Which was awesome. I'm so glad he did it.
I'm so happy he came on. I really appreciated him taking the time.
And I didn't realize that you guys hadn't really talked.
No.
In like 15 years.
15 years we hadn't spoken. And, you know, I ran into him on an airplane and we spoke briefly. Mm-hmm. But other than that, there was nothing. So it was catching up with a really good old friend. Mm-hmm. That does feel like family because we all went through something so big together.
Yep.
And so just to reflect on that and be able to kind of talk about it.
I was in New York in May or June and had lunch with Ben, who I haven't seen in a long time because he moved to New York and, you know, has babies and all of that.
Yeah.
And Peter reached out and we've been in touch. And so it's been really, it's been nice. You kind of, you guys have launched this whole thing.
Thank you, Rachel. Reunion. Thank you, Rachel. No, that's the most rewarding thing to me because, you know, I wouldn't necessarily pick up the phone and go, Josh, let's shoot the shit about the OC for a couple hours twice in a few months.
What are you talking about? You would call me every month.
If I want,
block your numbers.
Yeah, I know. Right, right. Well, look, but, or just, you know, talking to McGee and Norman and, but then.
That's an entertaining guest right there, McGee.
Yeah. Oh. Did you listen to that one?
I saw a lot of it. Very, very entertaining guy.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure. Absolutely.
It's been rewarding. And then also just taking a different perspective, as we've said, not just because obviously it was a moment in time and you're an actor and you're focused on your thing. But now looking at it, really trying to look at it and as a fan and, you know, 18 years later, completely different perspective. And so I had a question for you, Rachel, since we've been doing this, like what, after watching this, what storylines either surprised you because you didn't remember?
All of them. She doesn't remember anything. Yeah,
even now I'm like going back and I'm like, wait, what happened in the first season?
Like what you liked, what you didn't like, or
I definitely didn't like Oliver. He was very infuriating.
Yes.
That's a new comment.
That's not a new comment. I mean, that was...
I'm being sarcastic, Schwartz.
Oh, I can't... Your
Welcome
tone
to the
is
room.
lost on me.
Yeah, Oliver was very hard to bear because you're screaming at the screen and you're like, Marissa, like, wake up. What are you doing? And I had a lot of that. I don't know why all I can remember are things that I didn't like, which is... that tracks.
Yeah,
because negativity is popular. Yeah.
It's popular, sure.
But I really, truly now understand this show being a water cooler show. There was an idea out there that there weren't as many at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously I loved playing the Luke and Julie storyline, but I've had some reservations about watching it recently. And, you know, and I just didn't like Julie a lot. I realized how, you know, I never thought of her as a villain, but as a watcher, as a fan of it now, I'm like, wow, she really was the villain. But the thing that was interesting was truly what you said, Tijuana, the escape. To me, solidified this show as magical, and it established the chemistry, especially with Seth and Summer and the kids. And that, to me, really was that magical moment of, ah, here we go. This is what this show is. And then you mentioned it, too. My other favorite was the LA doing the meta of everything and how everybody, you know, you use Seth as the character to comment, and then all the characters started doing that as well. Those are two episodes I'm not in, by the way, but they were my favorite of the season.
Yeah. We may have gotten a little too meta too fast or deconstructed the show.
I don't know. The LA was really fun.
It's
that
fun.
Was a fun.
It's fun
episode.
But at a certain point, it's hard to buy that back, you know? Once you've kind of, this is something I wrestled with or thought about a lot of, like, once you've deconstructed your show, it's hard to put it back in the same way or go back to doing some of the same moves because you've already kind of called it out, you know? But that was just a function of not really knowing what the hell what I was doing and just going for it and having fun and kind of leaning into it and writing. It was almost at a certain point writing about the experience of making the show that season as much as it was telling the stories of these characters.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So looking back, you know, we've gone through season one. What sticks out to you? Like, does anything stick out? Like, oh, you wish you would have done this differently?
Every day of my life, that's all I do. is but you know what? I have to say, and maybe this is more of a season four conversation, but obviously you always think about what you could do differently or what you could have done better. Or, you know, sometimes you're moving so fast and making the show that you're like, well, that didn't work. Get it right in the, you know, how do we fix it? The next episode. And you know, I obviously Marissa's death, not to spoil anything that's coming in future seasons, but
spoiler.
But you know, there's a lot of stuff that people have asked about Oliver, what have you. But I have to say, combination of the amount of years it's been since the show has been off the air and how it feels like more people want to talk about the show now than they did when it went off the air. And the way people have kind of written about the show, and just, I sort of feel like, okay, I'm just going to accept this.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It may not have been perfect.
Proud of you.
In my mind, but I'm proud of the legacy of the show, and I'm proud of, you know, the work we all did. And let's be real, it's going to be like the, you know, the thing that we're remembered for, regardless of how many other things we do. And we've all done a lot of things since. And yeah, people just kind of still want to keep talking about it. And you can fight that. And I feel like Brody was kind of wrestling with this for a long time. And yeah, I feel like in his interview, he's kind of made peace with it.
It seems like he's accepted it, yeah, as well.
That people will forever.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Come he's up always to be like Seth Cohen. And no matter how many other things he's done and, you know, whatever else. And I think everybody wrestled with that a little bit in the moment, you know?
Yeah.
And I know Ben, that's something Ben wrestled with. And that's, you know, that's a journey actors go on, you know? And it's like you're fortunate enough to be in something that's successful. Mm-hmm. And then the flip side of that is people kind of only want to see you in that role.
Right.
You know, and obviously he's done a lot of great, great work since. So I think that's just something over time that you just make your peace with and you kind of appreciate it. Because you also realize, and Adam did say this, how rare it is,
yep,
to make something that people care about, that people still want to talk about, mm-hmm, all these years later. So I don't want to get too self-congratulatory, just to say there's some things I obviously would like to have done differently or done better, but I'm good.
You're right. And what's the definition of just
Rachel's
better?
Rachel's in shock. That
yeah, I'm like, who is this person?
The definition of better, like what's better? I mean, I think that—
And also, who are you trying to please?
Yeah.
Is it better because of some critic? Is it better because of some message board? Is it better because of, you know, whatever? Like, you have this sort of invisible, you know, I call it the mayor who kind of runs my mind, but like that you're trying to please or that you're trying to answer to. And then at a certain point, you're like, well, what has that person done?
We spoke with Alan Sepinwall, by the way.
Yeah.
And I said, so you're responsible for Marissa's death?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of. There was a very vocal contingent that you start to listen to. And then you realize, well, that's a small elite, mm-hmm, group of people who are watching the show in a very specific way.
From an adult point of view compared to teenagers.
Yeah.
Right.
And that was a lesson. I mean, we can get to that when we get to that. I want to save some for that.
But you mentioned
third season.
you were talking about Adam. He said something that was interesting and I had to reflect on it afterwards. He said that he thinks that the show is a celebration of affluence rather than a critique, but I feel like it's both.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's both.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think part of why people traditionally like to watch shows about wealthy people, and you can see that now in Succession, and obviously we did this on Gossip Girl and the new iteration of Gossip Girl, is to see people who are living these incredible lives, and you get access to that as a viewer, right? You get to go and be in these homes and fashion and what have you. But they're all miserable. So I think as a viewer, you feel good about that. You're like, well, I may not have as much money as these characters, as Caleb Nichol, but damn, I'm happier with my life. So I think there's that you kind of want it to be both a celebration and a critique at the same time.
Right.
Yeah. So synopsis: difficult decisions are made. Teresa plans to get an abortion. Am I allowed to say that? Abortion. But after speaking with Kirsten, who once dealt with this choice herself, she changes her mind. Ryan feels he must do the right thing and go back to Chino. Seth and Marissa grapple with losing Ryan. Julie and Caleb get married, but unbeknownst to Julie, Caleb is heading towards bankruptcy. Yeah.
It's not all he's heading towards.
Pool awaits.
Coldplay awaits, yeah.
Coldplay awaits, which is also something, well, that's second season. Okay. Okay, sorry.
Directed by?
Oh, yeah. Directed by Patrick Norris, who we had and we love. Mm-hmm. Written
love
by
love
this
Patrick
guy
Norris.
Over here, Josh Schwartz.
With a lot of help.
It aired on May 5th, 2004.
Jesus.
Cinco de Mayo.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. Let's get into this because, you know, Rachel, so often we do episodes where we don't talk about the episodes in depth and we have very interesting conversations. But since we have you here, Josh, we would like to get really in depth. Okay. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, let's go all the way.
Let's go for it. Yeah. So as we open on the episode, Seth is playing the name game for Teresa's baby. Thor is a really strong name, right?
Thor.
Thor.
Should have gone with that.
He's making some pretty terrible jokes as they're waiting outside the...
it's a nervous habit.
Planned Parenthood. Is that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah, try to lighten the mood.
Yeah, right, it's a Chandler right. Bing.
Little gallows humor.
But I don't know why swab is such a bad word. Ryan's what just is? A little touchy. He's like, don't say swab. He says, don't swab. Say swab.
Yeah. Swab?
Pee swab. And he's like, peanut.
Okay. Swab. I'm okay with swab. Yeah, they're outside of like Planned Parenthood or whatever.
We're going
it
really
might be.
Deep. We're doing line by line?
We're doing line by line.
Wow, okay.
Now we're all going to recite it.
let's just act it out. Okay, yeah.
Okay, so they're there. And then after that, we're in the Cohen's kitchen and they announce to Kirsten and Sandy, right, that Teresa is pregnant.
Yeah, they've skipped school and Teresa is pregnant. How they skip school. I don't know how they skip school, but that's okay. Because Dr. Kim's going to be pretty pissed off about that, right? That's not the kind of school.
Holes.
She runs a tight ship.
Well, we've dealt with domestic violence with Teresa and now teen pregnancy. The girl's not, she's getting the short end of the stick.
So I should
sidebar
here. She's getting
some kind of stick.
The pregnancy stick. So I should sidebar here. We had a different story in mind.
Oh,
really?
Yes. Originally. It was not a pregnancy story. It had to do more with Eddie. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we just had an actor conflict.
Really? Eric and, Balfour, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. We really like Eric, but I don't know if he was uncomfortable with the role or where the role was headed or he was busy. I can't remember at this point, but we had a different storyline planned and then we had to kind of...
Was it more domestic violence related?
Yeah, it was more
related?
The violent part, kind of bringing Ryan back to Chino.
Interesting.
And not pregnancy. And that's...
Yeah, well, because this is a big thing, you know, teen pregnancy, and we don't know who the father is.
We don't know.
So you don't know if it's Ryan or Eddie's. Mm-hmm. And Ryan in this whole episode, like being so responsible mm-hmm. and noble and all of that is impressive. And I was also really impressed with how mature Marissa and he are in particular in this episode.
It's come a long way.
I mean, they're basically, you know, they're adults having these conversations. Yeah. It's kind of crazy, which was surprising to me. But yeah, this was a big, big
Well,
topic.
I think if you're Ryan and you're a guy who grew up without a dad and a bad, you know, stepdad mm-hmm. around and your mom having the issues that she had, and this is something Bob and I talked a lot about and Stephanie, that this is something that you need to, it's just like a way to right the wrongs that were done to you.
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Overcompensate, I guess, in some ways.
No, I've
And take
heard
on
that.
Responsibility that was not his own.
I know dudes that are like, I don't want to be like what my father was or whatever it is. And then you have an opportunity when you have a kid.
I found that there's no escaping becoming who your father was. I'm more Steve Schwartz every day.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're lucky because Steve is the best.
Oh,
so,
you know, he's listening.
Yes, I do. Steve, I love you.
but you know what? I do have to say, you know, when Marissa says, or Ryan says, we were on a break, I just flashed to Rachel and Ross on Friends. And I'm like, she wasn't that cool about it. and
Marissa handles this a lot better than a sitcom.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a little bit of it, but it was just a week, Ryan. Yeah.
He works fast.
They do.
And to mention, Flying High by Jem plays during that scene. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Jem will be back in this episode.
She will.
We have Jem today.
We're talking to her.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yep.
Not just me?
No. You're not that good.
Right.
Okay. So, you know, this is starting to open up this whole thing with Kirsten's past as well. Mm-hmm. This pregnancy coming up. And they don't really talk about Kirsten in detail, like what happened with her. You know what happened though.
It did at one point, yeah.
Do you still?
I mean, Jimmy Cooper related, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we assume.
Yeah.
But it's never said.
No.
It's never, never, yeah. It's never revisited. I mean, clearly Sandy doesn't know, but she's the first time she was revealing this to anyone, it's a 16-year-old. And she doesn't actually say it. Is there a reason that the abortion word was never used? Is it a Fox thing?
Wasn't a Fox thing, I don't think. I think it was a 2004 thing.
Really?
I think it was.
Really?
I just think in that time it was still a little bit, or
a little bit Texas.
Just people were uncomfortable with it, or there was also something about the word that was so literal. You know what I mean? That was so heavy that I remember every time I tried to write the word abortion, mm-hmm. it just felt like, you know, it's a heavy storyline, obviously, but the show is a lighter, more, you know, so it was hard to marry that tone with that word. So I remember never
purposely
feeling comfortable writing
just,
it.
Yeah.
Trying to avoid it as much as possible.
I've listened to a podcast that avoided that word specifically, like today. So I don't know if it's still in some circles kind of a sensitive situation. So.
Yeah, I mean it's
a sensitive
subject. It's a word that people have a lot.
Yes.
of, obviously
feeling towards.
Right. Yeah, and you don't want to feel like you're taking a position on it. You don't want to feel like you are condemning a character for not doing it or celebrating a character for doing it. Obviously, everybody has to kind of make that choice themselves. So it's very personal, and it's obviously a hot button topic more so today, even than maybe in 2004. But so trying to kind of play the storyline without leading too heavily into it.
But I have to admit, watching this episode, I was frustrated. I was confused. You did a good job of actually making me feel like I was inside of a teenager's brain who had to deal with this dilemma. Like, and people, you know, and clearly people were having different reactions and exactly what you were saying. It's a hot topic, but it's a hot topic button and
hot button topic.
Hot button topic. See, I do that.
Hot topic.
Oh, that store still exists.
Hot topic. And yeah, I didn't know what to feel. And like, what's going on inside of Ryan's head? And there was so much back and forth all the time. So it definitely, you conveyed that very, very well. And so did the actors.
They did.
We go to Caleb's office. All that's unraveling.
I love the scenes with Sandy and Caleb because Sandy's just always just digging.
Yeah, they don't like each other. I mean, they did a good kind of back and forth. Yeah.
Sandy and Kirsten like really go at it in the beginning of this episode.
Yeah.
That was hot, actually.
Hot.
Well, because I don't, like, a lot of times I'm just not like a fan of the
tongue in television.
But it was, I don't know. That particular one was, you know, she was seducing him to get what she wanted. And I don't know. It was actually pretty good.
Woman taking her power.
No comment from Josh.
Kelly's great in this whole episode. I mean,
this is her. She's the MVP of this episode.
We'll get to her moment at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. I always got the chills thinking about it.
But wait, going back, I thought it was, we always learned some odd random things about Caleb through Kirsten. He hates carnies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Carnies and cilantro. Yeah. Those two things. You're just like, what could be weird?
And how he says frittata.
or booty.
Yeah.
Booty call.
Allendale is so fun to write for.
So, all right, pregnancy's going on.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Teresa. Mm-hmm. Summer won't sleep with Seth. Is this because she doesn't want to get pregnant?
I mean, your character, what was your motivation?
You wrote it.
Yeah. And also in that scene.
Yeah.
You say, oh, Ryan and Marissa are the perfect couple. What? No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, sure. On paper? No, not even on paper. I don't know. Summer is inexplicable, we'll say.
Well, good word.
Thank you.
Is that on your calendar today?
Yes.
I think with Ryan
and toilet paper.
Oh, nice. Well, and with Ryan and Marissa, I think also it's just there was always that couple in high school that like you're caught up in their drama. Mm-hmm. And when they break up, you feel like you've broken up. And so it's problematic. And obviously as an adult, you look at it and you're like, that is far from perfect, but there is something, you know,
magnetic,
and romantic about it, you know?
Right.
Okay. So.
And Summer's stuck with this, you know, this guy who needs a humidifier.
He needs a humidifier and he is such a little bitch at the end of this episode, but we'll get into that.
Ooh.
I have some personal feelings about
you call him, you know, it's funny. Can I tell you a funny story? I was working on this and watching the show. And I said, honey, would you be upset if I called you a dumbass? And he was like, what? I explained. I said, well, Summer, you know, smacks him and goes, dumbass. And he says, well, are you doing it to hurt my feelings or am I being a dumbass? And I went, oh yeah, Seth's being a dumbass. Okay, good. Thanks for that.
Yeah, it was well deserved.
It was sensitive.
Yeah.
What? It was a well-deserved comment.
Yeah.
It was a tough choice. Tougher summer. Tougher summer to get left behind.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Whatever. We'll get to that at the end.
Okay.
I have feelings.
There's a quick scene of Marissa having to leave and pack up from Jimmy. I really feel bad for Jimmy here.
Oh, my God.
He's, yeah.
Constantly.
Yeah.
Constantly.
Poor guy.
Poor Jimmy. I like when your new beautiful mansion gets revealed. I loved you in that scene, Mindy. It was really funny.
Yeah, well, you know, that place, first of all, everyone, I'm sure some people know this, but it was the Boz's house, Brian Bosworth
yeah.
from the Seattle Seahawks. And I believe I love that Caleb says, "I built it for you." And I was thinking about that on the drive here. And I thought, well, first of all, it would take years to build that house.
Not if you're Caleb Nichol.
But I'm assuming, and I'm probably right, that the Newport Group was building this as a spec house, and he was just able, because he's bankrupt, who knows, but he was able to just move into this house and say, "Oh, honey, I built it for you."
That's a good theory. I like that. Let's go with that. Okay.
Can I jump back to the scene?
Yes.
I think the scene when Sandy's questioning Ryan, saying, you know, has Teresa told her mom?
Mm-hmm.
And then Seth comes in and he's talking about pudding. But by the way, when he's talking about pudding, all I could think was your remark about him being E.T. And he does mm-hmm. pudding. He says that to Teresa. I'm like, was that an improv? He's just being so silly. But when Sandy says to Ryan, we're going to work this out, I thought, and then they start talking about their child raising skills. Is he actually offering to help raise the kid, or is he just teasing
Sandy?
Yeah. Or is he just teasing Seth? They're just having this, like, I'm like, what? When he said, we'll figure this out. I'm like,
I think Sandy would absolutely, if it was called for, would raise. I mean, he brought Ryan in.
On Valentine's Day 1929, a group of gangsters was massacred in a cold Chicago garage. The crime shook the country. And even though investigators had only just started looking for answers, everyone was sure they already knew who was behind the crime. Al Capone. Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of the new true crime history podcast, American Criminal. We take you inside the minds of some of our most notorious felons and outlaws, exploring the dark side to the American dream. In our latest season, a child of Italian immigrants sets out to make good on the promises of that dream. But Al Capone's path to success doesn't take him down the straight and narrow. Instead, he transforms himself from a smarter-than-your-average thug into the most infamous criminal America has ever known. Listen to American Criminal Al Capone wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get early ad-free access to the entire season first, plus hundreds of other ad-free history podcast episodes, subscribe at intohistory.com.
He did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, he kind of like says, I mean, it's the end of the episode again, but yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, but yeah, that's interesting because he does a little flip-flopping. So at that point, it's like, well, Teresa's having this baby and we're all here for you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Everything's good. Okay. Very good. But then Teresa says, "Can I talk to you?" And changes her mind. And now everything's changed completely.
Mm-hmm.
What, that she's not going to keep the baby?
Yeah.
Right. And then it's like a relief to Marissa and Ryan. Right?
Yeah.
But then Seth is going on about my sailboat and come on, bro, let's go do, you know. And
we see the sailboat again, by the way.
Yeah. Summer Breeze.
Yes, Summer Breeze is back in action.
That's what I'm saying. We call back a lot of things from the pilot in this episode.
And that scene actually does mirror the other, you know, the other scene in the pilot when they're on the boat. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to, I think Seth is dealing with it in the best way possible, trying to cheer him up and everything's going to be fine. My life isn't going to get disturbed in any way, but I can just see the wheels turning with Ryan. Like something it's that too complicated comment. Like mm-hmm. it's just complicated. He doesn't know how to process all of this stuff, right?
Yeah. He's a teenager.
Yeah.
He's lived a lot of life, but he's still in pretty deep here.
And then Marissa asks or talks to Ryan about it. And she says, and this is so telling of Marissa. She just says, "I think we should spend this whole summer being normal." And she just craves normalcy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you know, and that's a fantasy. Because what's normal, right?
Well, relative to the year she's had.
Or just life in general.
Yeah. But I mean, if you think about what she's been through over the course of the season. It's been a lot. So I think that's a thing, you know, understand her craving. And obviously when we get to season two and her, you know, freaking out and throwing the pool chair in the pool.
I look forward to that episode.
Yeah. The normalcy has not, did not happen.
No.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Did
normal
not get the
does not exist in the OC.
No. That's true. Nobody wants to watch that.
Nobody wants to see that.
It's boring.
Well, I think a really important scene is, you know, first of all, we talked about Teresa and Kirsten having lunch. I was trying to remember where that location was. It was stunning. It looked like Zuma or something. Or was it? Because it wasn't high up like Palos Verdes.
No. We were in, we were all over Marina Del Rey and Malibu on this episode.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because it was right down there close to the water's edge. Yeah. A lot of times we were in Palos Verdes up high. But
for the wedding.
Yeah.
Wayfarer Chapel.
I remember that chapel.
I remember it too. And we returned to it in season two.
That's probably why I remember
it. Right. But then the next scene I think is important to mention is Sandy is a little judgy and kind of heightened questioning Kirsten. Like, what did you say to her to make her change her mind?
Mm-hmm.
And
wait, is Teresa back to having the baby?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, she's to say.
We're back there.
We're back.
Kay. She's back to having the baby.
Right.
I'm going to keep it.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. In the pool house, she says, I'm going to keep the baby. It changes everything. And this is where I wrote, I'm so confused.
Yeah.
But
so is she.
Yeah.
Clearly.
But Sandy, having that angry or almost frustrated, he's frustrated, almost angry. And I think it's just this fear of not being able to control. Like he'd accepted the idea that she was not going to have this child. And now she is going to have this child. And Kirsten says something, you know, to him. Denial is a very effective coping mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And he's just like, what is this cryptic? My wife's being very cryptic. What the hell is going on?
Yeah, I think Sandy's trying to, you know, he doesn't want to.
Well, he's protecting Ryan.
He's protecting Ryan. And he's trying to suss out Kirsten's kind of point of view in all of this and what she's keeping from him. And
yeah. Teresa says, come with me. And that moment. Oh,
yeah.
No, that's a big one because now Ryan is just when he was having. You know, he's trying to have an idyllic new life, which has been anything but this whole season.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, he's not saying, well, what if it's Eddie's? What if it's... I think he's such the hero, such the savior to everyone.
If it's his, he's going to be responsible for it. And if it's Eddie's, he doesn't want Eddie in that kid's life for it. So either way, Ryan kind of feels like he's got to be the one to step up.
Yeah, and he does. I really like the scene when they're all... So where... Wait. They're all at... Is it rehearsal dinner? Then when the kids break away.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they go to the beach. That scene, and they're like, this is the same part of the beach when we were at that party, which is obviously another callback to the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And I like how Summer's like, oh, you were at that party?
And Seth actually...
Mirroring the actress playing her. No recollection of anything.
Well, Seth actually tastes the sand. Was that... Improv?
Oh, that was really funny.
Yeah,
I think that was
improv.
Yeah, he was like, oh, it tastes the same.
Yeah, yeah. That was a Brodyism.
Yeah, it was funny.
That was a pretty powerful moment because, you know, I mean, they were at the rehearsal dinner and then they just up and leave.
That's what you do when your kid's at a rehearsal dinner.
Absolutely.
They exit. Yeah, yeah.
The hell do they care about Julie Cooper, Mary, and Caleb? Come on.
Yeah, they're like, get me out of here.
Which, by the way, at that rehearsal dinner, nobody is happy. In fact, when Caleb gets up to talk about being the head of this family, the music just changes and it gets all kind of morbid. And Julie's like, I'm happy. But when they're at that, they're at the beach and Ryan, that's what's going on in his head. He's just all of a sudden, I'm leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept thinking, it's only 50 minutes away. But he's leaving in a sense that just everything is changing. And what you're saying is, it's almost like, this is my destiny. These are my roots. This is my family. This is what I came from. It's pulling me back.
And that's why we call the episode The Ties That Bind, you know, not just because it's a Springsteen song, but also that really everybody is kind of, how much can you actually change your fate? How much, you know, can you change your destiny? How much are we kind of destined to repeat the sins of our parents, or be drawn back into our past. And we were kind of doing all that while being drawn back into the past of the show. You know, we were trying to tell that story of how the past always comes back by also, again, using a lot of sort of the iconography of the first season and kind of reexamining it. Also, I think in high school, you know, when we think of our own high school, we think of it as this like endless thing that was, that had like a kind of a permanence to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really always changing. It's not that long. You're not in high school for that long. It changes so much. And so this idea of like, well, Ryan's only going to be in Chino, and it's not that, it's not like he's going to, you know, Guam, which we played with. No, we didn't play with that. But it will never be the same. You know, these high school relationships and dynamics are delicate, and, you know, people can just, it can all fall apart. It can all fall apart.
Yeah. And, you know, well, we get to the scene of the wedding where it's kind of, everything's coming to the head, you know.
Ahead.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And first of all, Melinda, you look fucking gorgeous.
Aw, thanks.
She looks so pretty.
Is that a Vera Wang dress? Ew,
how did you remember that?
See?
Hey, you do remember
the important stuff. Vera
mm-hmm.
Wang was... Yeah, it was, and that was the one and only. Lots of pearls on that one.
Really?
Yeah.
So
at the way, at the famous Wayfarers Chapel.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. San Pedro. It's actually a very small
San Pedro.
I mean, San
Palos Verdes, right?
San yeah. Pedro. Sorry.
Yeah. Very different.
Very different.
We shot in San Pedro, though.
Yes.
I have a very distinct memory of shooting. That was near the end of the schedule, and we shot, and it was like a very. It was warm, you know. A day shooting that episode. And I do remember very distinctly. After we got done, my agent at the time, Jason Spitz, had Laker tickets for me and Ben and Adam. And we had to go straight from like Malibu Palos Verdes to get to the Staples Center to the game. And there were floor seats or like the WME seats. It was very cool. Very, very, you know, you're sitting right next to the Laker bench. And there was this guy sitting on the other side of us who's at every game, and he's an older guy, must be very wealthy, I'm assuming. And he looks at Ben and Adam, and he's like, Ryan, Seth, where's Marissa in Summer? And I was like, whoa, that's when I, you know.
That was
like,
your moment?
There were just moments where you're like, oh, this guy knows the characters, then, you know, people are watching the show. I also remember because we were sitting outside and shooting all day, and it was very warm. And at the game, I was like, God, what smells? And it was me, because there was no time to go home or change.
And
just
fresh.
Sweating out. Yeah, the whole time. I'm like, I'm lucky. The surprise, the Lakers were able to play with me that close to them.
They probably lost because of that.
They may have. Yeah,
I'm sure you weren't the only one that had a little funk. But
yeah.
But before we get too close to the end, there is a scene that I have heard repeatedly for fans that absolutely loved, and I had to go back and watch, was when Marissa is bringing over her stuff to Caleb and Julie's new house, that massive house. I mean, even on screen, it just looked massive. It is one of the best exchanges between Julie and Haley and Jimmy. And she's saying, you know, why can't you be happy for me? I am. And what are you going to go back to being? Oh, you're only with her because of Kirsten. Go back to being a co-core and a stripper. I mean, everything. It's just like this.
I couldn't actually believe, because that is your future husband's daughter, like how you were talking to her. I was pretty, I was very ballsy, I have to say.
But it was, for some reason, it was just like classic Julie. I'm like, oh, she's the villain here. You know, because.
Here. But. Yeah. There's an arc coming.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, very much so.
Many times on the show, the kids are more responsible and better behaved than the adults.
Right.
Which turns out kind of true in life.
Kind of true.
Now that we're on the other side of it, now that we are the adults, kind of true.
I had a question for you on another scene. At the rehearsal dinner, there were two funny things that happened, which I just loved, going back to Allendale, Caleb. When Jimmy walks up, he just says, get away from me, which was hysterical. And then when Sandy comes up to talk to him, once again, I love their exchanges, and he calls the DA a pant load. What's a pant load? Like, you know, just a...
Like a pant full of shit?
I've never heard the term before.
You know, we were always trying to come up with ways that we could use some colorful language and get it past broadcast standards and practices. I believe you called somebody ass ears or like...
ass face?
Right.
Well, definitely ass face.
Definitely
but then
ass
we
face.
Were trying to like... evolve that. We didn't get to Asto, but season
we
five.
We could have. Yeah.
Right.
Reboot Asto. but yeah, then at the wedding, we had Jem singing Maybe I'm Amazed.
Yeah.
which was awesome.
I remember that. And I remember her being super nice.
Really nice.
Yeah.
And did a beautiful job. And, mm-hmm. you know, there was a lot of conversations about what song and landing on that song and her version of it and kind of delivered all the emotion.
Yeah.
Not all the emotion because there's more emotion to come.
With Ryan and Marissa dancing on the dance floor. Oh. I mean, talk about a heartbreaker.
Yeah.
You know, and she says, I love you. He doesn't say it back. He can't, I think. I think he's, well, I don't know. That's just my take on
it. Yeah. That like, just it's, he's leaving.
He's leaving. Like, what's he going to do? Mm-hmm. So leaving means breaking up with her.
Absolutely.
Well, so
I mean,
like,
leaving to go be with Teresa.
To go be a baby daddy.
Be a baby daddy and be with her. And look, it's hard for Marissa too, because it's not like it was a new girl that Ryan met, you know, in the week that they were on their break. It's somebody he has a long history with. Yeah. And that was another thing that we talked about. I mean, obviously they survived the Oliver thing and then Teresa shows up.
Right.
You know, like he gets not a moment's peace. But,
Well, someone brings that up to Marissa. Is it Seth in this episode where he's like,
oh, yeah. Right.
When he calls her out, he's like, well, you know, it's your fault. Like, Oliver, you didn't even see what was going on and you guys broke up because of that. So this is all your fault.
Yeah. Not great.
Not great. Not great on Seth's
yeah,
part.
Yeah. Maybe don't double down and she's already feeling bad enough.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
A fair point. But I think the larger issue, and this is again something that we talked about, was Marissa can't. It's Teresa. I mean, it's somebody that kind of goes back to Ryan's childhood and it's somebody he has a history with that is greater than the history that they have. So it's a hard thing to argue.
But the fact that she understands that, like, goes, it talks to the maturity of the kids in this episode, which is, it was really insane to me watching it. I could not believe the level of maturity.
Well, I think she understands that. This wasn't a fling, a one night stand. It was, okay, it was a week, but it's somebody he cares for and...
It's like family. I mean, not that kind of family because that's weird, but you know.
Who, Ryan and Marissa?
Ryan and Teresa.
Yeah, it is like family.
You know what I'm saying.
It's like childhood friends.
But there was the other episode a few back where Kirsten says, you know, he loves you. Just kind of, she was taking the, let Teresa in your life. Just be accepting of Teresa in your life. And I think she's, you know, Marissa's trying, she really has so much maturity and she's trying not to, she knows going back to the bottle isn't helpful. As long as she has this, but
she does.
Yeah, we know she does. But this when Ryan says, "I want to make this work," was there a? We don't hear the words of okay, because I think they try to stay in contact over the summer after this.
Ryan and Marissa?
Yeah,
do
I
they?
Think that's been established. It's established in the first episode that they try to stay in contact. But by the anyway, we'll have to get there.
Yeah,
but,
please.
But they're.
I'm like my mind. Is
but
just...
I didn't. But they. But he's without. Basically, Marissa's saying, I get it, but he doesn't have to say, I'm broken up with you. She just knows. Okay.
Yeah. Unspoken. He's leaving. It's over.
Yeah. He doesn't say, I love you back.
Yeah.
Also, another thing that's going on is Seth is trying to sell the boat to help finance Teresa's life.
Mm-hmm. Why is everyone trying to pay for Teresa?
She needs help.
Yeah.
She needs help. He tries to sell the Summer Breeze to a very handsome young gentleman.
Yes. He's a cute boat guy.
Yeah.
He's on Days of Our Lives. I recognized him for years. But I noticed something. The boat is $6,000. Wasn't that the price of the debt that Trey owed and the car?
Interesting. Yes. Everything is intentional.
I know.
Everything is intentional.
I was like, I literally went into this like, where are the Easter eggs? Because throughout the entire season, I had... Can we ask Josh this? Can we ask Josh this? And you would have been, you know, very frustrated with all the questions.
Yeah, Rachel asked all those questions. I get a text every day.
It's just he would answer like every 10th.
There was a lot of questions. Like,
I don't know. But then I was going to go back and I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to have to figure them out for myself.
Yeah. So he's trying to sell the boat. And I like the scene where Summer's at the boat and she's like, Summer, that's weird. My name's Summer.
Yeah.
I think you get it. Don't you think so?
Well, yeah, Summer's smarter than the average bear we come to learn.
Well, yeah. Genius.
Genius levels. Kate Beckinsale.
Going to Brown.
Right.
Freeing some bunnies.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, we'll get there too.
Yeah.
Pancake.
There
you
go.
That's my bunny's name, everybody.
We almost named our new kitten Pancakes after Pancakes recently.
Aw, that's cute. Okay, so now let's get to the wedding. We're already there. Yeah. We're on the dance floor. Yeah. Like, there's so much going on here. Is Caitlin in the wedding? I see a girl walking. Is it actually Shailene? No.
No, no.
Okay. So there's some, presumably Caitlin is there.
It was not Shailene.
Right.
Yeah.
Someone,
yeah.
Looks like her from the back.
I don't think,
I don't know, but she walks anyway. Was she? Yeah, because we didn't see her again. Anyway, I just clocked that. But so we're at the wedding. Everyone looks beautiful. Yeah.
It went off without a hitch. I think people are surprised. It was a very
A hitch being
the wedding went off.
Yeah.
There was no drama with the wedding.
Yeah, there was no drama. There was no one got pushed into like a chocolate fondue or whatever. Yeah.
Which would have been fun.
Not above that.
Yeah. But as I'm watching it, I remember the dress I'm wearing. I remember that scene on the hill with Seth, and I had remembered it was sad, but I didn't remember what happened.
That was a nice, picturesque day.
It was a very picturesque day. I have to agree.
It's a powerful scene.
It is. And Seth is, this is where he starts. He's just acting so. I know I said a little bitch because he's just like, he's being a little, I understand his feelings, but like the way he's handling it is a little.
Much. Well, sure. I mean, it's a fair criticism.
Yeah.
It could be of the writing. It could be of the character. But I think if you're Seth, I'm assuming you're making it of the writing, knowing you. But I think for Seth, you know, Ryan arriving saved his life. You know, I mean, he was a kid who had no friends. Mm-hmm. He was completely alienated. He was on this boat named after a girl who didn't know he existed. And it was going to be a long road for Seth, probably till he got to college, till he was able to like find his, you know, his people and fit in. And so Ryan, the prospect of Ryan leaving is terrifying to Seth. And it's like, if there's no Ryan there, then why even stay? Mm-hmm. What is, you know what I mean? Because it's like his brother at this point.
Sure.
And I think he feels a little bit betrayed. Not that he blames Ryan for what he's doing, but you know, I know you guys had a whole debate about Seth's selfishness versus selflessness.
Well, this also speaks to his.
It does.
He can be very self-involved, that little
Seth. He can, but by the way, that's what teenagers are like.
Their whole world is
their
still
whole world
them.
Is themselves. Yeah. You know? Mm-hmm.
That's fair.
And he might take it a little far at times, but I think for him, the idea of Ryan leaving was just so destabilizing and so terrifying. Even though he has Summer.
Yeah. She really is like, I'm here for you.
Yes.
You know, and is very, you know, just supportive in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really sweet because he's like, the boat was named after you.
Yeah.
I really liked that moment between them.
I can see both sides. I can see this. Look, Summer right here.
Yeah.
But you still need your bestie. And I think what I was
bros before hoes
really thinking on this, and I thought he's terrified and the stakes are so high with Ryan leaving that he's grieving. And grief does crazy things to people.
No, the whole end of the show is like Ryan has died, you know, in terms of how everyone reacts to it. And you know, it is, I think that is correct. And that's how Seth is dealing with it. Like without Ryan, there's no point in staying here.
Right.
I mean, I think that's, if anybody ever has a question, because I've heard so many different debates about how Seth is acting and why did he take off, it's a death to the people that have come to love him. And
for Kirsten, for Sandy, for Marissa,
Yeah, which brings us to, it is like a death because, you know, at the end of this episode, and well, first, you know, Ryan, he's saying his goodbyes. When he goes to say goodbye to Seth and he gives him a map to Tahiti, I mean, my heart, and Seth is just like, stone cold, like, no.
Well, it's a total flip, obviously, of the pilot scene when, you know, Ryan comes to say goodbye and
was that one of the hugs?
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the hugs. Yeah. No hug this time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He gives him a big hug and it kind of surprises Ryan and the pilot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so we wanted to have the inverse of
polar
that.
Polar opposite. Yeah, yeah.
But can I say when he was packing in the pool house in his pilot outfit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I first have to go home in the same outfit.
Gotta go home in the hoodie.
You gotta go in the hoodie, the leather jacket.
Where's the choker?
The choker, the wristband. I mean, the whole nine yards.
We leaned into the iconography. Like I said. Yeah.
Like you said.
Like I said.
I thought, he's gotta have more stuff than that. Where's all the underpants that Kirsten bought?
Little
for
known
him?
Fact about Ryan Atwood that I'm gonna reveal right now. Went commando. Whole season, fully just letting them flap in the breeze.
There. Mom, the pool house is just full of all the unopened underpants that Kirsten bought him.
Yeah, but he has to leave that way. I mean, it's so impactful, you know, when you're watching the whole end of this and he's saying
his
goodbyes.
Putting back, it's almost like, you know, Batman putting on his you know, his costume. You know, it's like Ryan's literally putting that skin back on.
Right.
You know, putting that persona back on. And the best way to kind of embody that is by putting on, you know, the actual physical clothes.
Right.
And the harbor clothes or the Newport clothes aren't going to fly in Chino.
No.
Yeah. And okay, so you're seeing everyone kind of reacting to this.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know we talked a little bit about this, but Kelly in the pool house, yeah, like making up the bet. I got chills again. Like,
yeah. Now, I remember when we shot that and she went for it and we were all just...
It's gut-wrenching.
Yeah. We just, no one knew what to say or do after that was over.
That moment alone, you're like, oh, you are like, this is masterclass. Like, you're, this is incredible. And yeah, you totally feel it. And
then you're like, cut, let's go again.
You're like, I can't do it anymore.
Yeah. I know.
No, I really think, I don't know that we spoke over the season about Kirsten enough, mm-hmm, because we've got a lot of storyline coming up with her, mm-hmm, but she really, really, the character and my friend Kelly really, yeah, really impressed me on this episode.
But also remember, yeah, you know, in the pilot, again, as doing the inverse, who didn't want Ryan to stay in the house? It was, mm-hmm, Kirsten who wanted Inver- Ryan to go, right, who busted him at the, you know, so she was the one who was the least kind of welcoming to Ryan when he, mm-hmm, when he first got there. Not wrong. You know, a lot of her fears about what would happen with Ryan's arrival did play out. But then by the end, that it really kind of, it's a really powerful example of just how much Ryan has kind of embedded himself into the Cohen family, how much he, absolutely, is a Cohen, that this woman who didn't want him there is now grieving him like it's the loss of another child. And obviously knowing that she
had this abortion.
I know. And knowing that she had an abortion that's alluded to, there's that too, you know, that she lost a child and now she's losing another child and she's grieving for Seth. So you really are crying.
I know.
Get it together, Bilson.
I really, no, this, I do. I know I get emotional, but like.
I didn't know you get emotional. I had like a heart of stone.
No, she cries every episode.
I cry a lot in episodes, but you know, and Kelly just blew me away. And, yeah, and. Okay, so Seth, I'll get
to Hallelujah's playing, which obviously is a callback. Yeah,
yeah, the Hallelujah. Yeah. You, anytime, you know, those chords.
Those mournful chords.
They come on and you're, yeah, just like, oh, fuck.
No, and there's so my uncle, who I was very, very close to, was my mom's brother, passed away of brain cancer right as we were casting the pilot. And the song that he really gravitated towards at the end of his life was Hallelujah, and played at his funeral. So that was a big reason why that song was a part of the show in season one and why it felt appropriate there as well. Because it was, you know, grieving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's one of the most iconic montages that we have on the OC after Seth puts his earbuds in and then Ryan drives off with, mm-hmm, Teresa, mirroring that.
With Marissa yep, standing out front.
Yep.
I mean, the tears, I mean, just flowing.
Yeah.
The song, the whole, the lighting, the look back and her, mm-hmm, standing there and him driving away.
Yeah. No, Patrick and the crew did a great job kind of recreating all those.
Mm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good shout out to Patrick, yeah, Morris, because it was really just beautiful, mm-hmm, and emulated everything,
yeah,
that you saw in the pilot, felt in the pilot. Mm-hmm. It was just really impactful. And then Seth, obviously you see Seth leave these notes for his mom and dad in, yeah, the summer.
Mm-hmm.
He's off to Tahiti, I guess. Never to be seen again, if
or
that's
Portland,
the case.
Yeah, yeah. Got, I don't know if they packed enough snacks to get to Tahiti, but yeah.
Catalina, maybe.
Yeah.
But Marissa actually gets picked up by a limo.
I know. Yeah.
She gets, a limo comes,
yeah,
out.
Yeah. Instead of the pickup truck.
Instead of the pickup truck, right? Right. Yep. And then she walks into the new house.
And she's on the balcony. And, you know, sure, that it was really about like, she's a prisoner. She's like the, mm-hmm, princess in the castle again. And she's, yep, kind of back in her.
Where she started.
Prison. Yeah.
Yep. With her vodka.
Yep.
And had she been, I mean, had she been main, I don't think she'd been drinking too much during this last.
No, she'd been, that she'd was been definitely good after Chrismica. She kind of, you know, was better. And then this, right, was sort of the return to, yeah, to that version of Marissa.
Well, how could it not be?
Self-medicating.
Quite frankly.
Yeah.
And I think we talked in the first, you told us the story about the stunt guy on the boat, but maybe tell the audience
you
again.
You did? Tell me, because I don't know.
Oh, the guy looked nothing like Brody.
Yeah, with the wig, you get a quick glimpse of him.
Yeah, Oh my God, they came out in this wig, this like Jufro wig, and it was just he didn't look anything like Adam. And you're like, oh boy, how's this gonna work? But you know, if you freeze frame and go through, you can probably get some.
So it wasn't Brody sailing the little catamaran thing off?
I feel like Brody never fully committed to the role. He never learned how to sail a catamaran to Tahiti. If he really cared, he would have.
He would have taken sailing lessons.
Yeah. Definitely.
And nowadays, you would have used a drone, but what did you use to get that shot?
Do you remember?
A helicopter?
I don't think we had a helicopter. I think that's the one piece where we actually got to go to Newport and shoot. We did a little bit of second unit photography. So it may have been a helicopter, okay, to be honest.
Because it was, he was pretty tiny.
I think it was the helicopter.
Okay.
Yes, it would have been a drone now. But that we very rarely ever got to shoot in Newport.
Right.
I believe that was one of the days.
Yeah. Gosh, what a good episode.
And that's the end of the episode. He sails off to Tahiti.
Or wherever he's going. Portland.
He goes to Portland, yeah. But we don't know that.
We don't know that.
Yeah.
I remembered that. Probably because you just said it 2 minutes ago.
That's exactly what happened.
We have some trivia for you, Schwartz.
Oh, God. I'm not covered with these.
Well,
okay.
Let's see how you do.
Catherine Gallagher couldn't even get...
One's right about her parents.
Parents being married.
Well, you mean her actual parents?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, not about
no.
Sandy.
No.
Got it.
But yeah. She was...
She's a hoot.
We love you, Kath.
She's a hoot and a holler. Yeah.
All right. Go for it.
Okay. In the pilot, Julie said Marissa wanted to wear Prada Mary Janes for the fashion show. But what did Julie have her wear instead?
Can I call Stephanie?
Can I phone a friend?
Yeah. Stephanie would definitely know this. And Prada Mary Janes is definitely something Stephanie fed me.
Well, can I tell you that I said I pronounced it incorrect? And
You did?
Yeah. I think Kelly and Tate even, because I don't know. Yeah.
I know you referred to her hair as Avril Lavigne.
My hair, yeah.
Yeah. What does she wear?
It's Manolo's.
Oh, yeah, Manolo's.
But
yeah.
I said you Manolo. And everybody at the table, when mm-hmm. I said the line, like, I think it's Manolo.
Got it.
All right. In The Outsider, where was Donnie from?
Donnie the Angry Busboy?
Yeah.
Paul Wesley?
Yeah. I don't think Paul Wesley was his name when he was
it
on
wasn't.
The OC.
It wasn't. Where was Donnie from?
Yeah.
He says...
I'll give you a hint. It's in California.
No, I know. Because later, there's a shootout at the bait shop, and those guys are from Garden Grove, I believe.
And he says something about an Abercrombie and Fitch water polo playing bitch. Can't hack it in...
Does it also rhyme?
No.
can you give me a first letter?
C.
Not Chino.
Yeah.
But he was rhyming... No. Carson?
No. Nope. Corona.
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 Well, kind of relevant right now.
Heyo.
Hey.
I mean, I'll be surprised if you get this, but I'll be very
I haven't
impressed.
Got any of them, so
no.
I'll be
what song is playing when Oliver tries to run down Ryan and Luke with the golf car in the links?
You should. Music is your thing, sir.
I know. It's been a minute. Will you give me a hint?
When it rains, you jump in a...
Was Puddle of Mud?
Yeah. Good.
Wow.
Away From Me.
That was a bit outside of the musical palette of the show.
Okay.
I guess that's what Oliver was bringing.
Yes.
Some new
clearly.
Metal. Some new metal.
Did you know there was a video game of that?
Of Oliver in a golf cart?
Of the Lynx. I found an old video game that they had. It was like almost like Atari style.
Wow.
Yeah. how much were the kisses for the kissing booth in the telenovela?
Too much.
Fuck you.
$5?
$10, Schwartz.
That's a lot.
Wow. Yeah,
that's more than that.
Overcharging. Jeez.
That's Newport prices.
Yeah. It's not a lot of exclusivity happening there for Summer.
Yeah, all right. In which episode does Summer reveal that she has rage blackouts?
Oh, Tijuana.
Yeah. Do you know what it's called? That episode?
Yeah. The escape.
Yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
The episode where you became a series regular.
Is that right?
Well, mm-hmm. Is that you?
So we were talking about moments where like all of a sudden you're like, oh, I think people are watching the show, right? Where you're uh-huh. making it in a bubble. So there was the episode. It was the girlfriend, the first time Caleb, you know, brings over his trophy girlfriend. And they did a screening of that at a bar in Manhattan Beach. And we pulled up and there was like all these fans there. And it was like kind of crazy. And I think that was the first moment where we all went,
yeah.
Whoa.
Right. Yeah.
Then there was the... very esteemed VH1 Guilty Pleasure Award that we won.
Was that the one in Vegas?
No, that was in LA.
Oh.
But I just remember like being told you're going to Universal for an award. And I was like, what? And I didn't even understand what was happening. And I didn't know if it was like, was this a good thing or bad? Like, but people knew the show and we'd only aired like 5 or 6 episodes and we showed up and we have really funny pictures from that night. And I'm the dork who has like my ticket like in my pocket. So every photo, I just have like the giant pass to hand my pocket, but you're like, what's happening? And people kind of are aware of the show. We're winning like an award. I mean, granted, it's the Guilty Pleasure of the Year award, but So that was a moment. Anyway, the escape, I remember Howard Stern talking about the show, and you could probably find the audio where he is talking about that episode and the scene in the car, and he had a little thing for you, which, you know.
Really?
You blew your chance with Howard.
God damn it.
And the whole thing about the Jufro and the, you know, and the dry air and death cab. And anyway, he was talking about that. And that was like a moment. You're like, whoa, Howard Stern is watching the show. Sorry,
right.
Sorry. That's a little sidebar off
the
escape.
That's when you're saying when you saw it, you went, I'm making her a series regular. That's what you're saying?
Well, I was saying two different things. One, I was just saying that in that episode.
You made the decision to make her a series regular.
Yeah. Both of you guys. But
But we didn't actually, it didn't happen until like episode like 11 or 12 or something like that. Or the back nine.
Well, yeah, just contractually.
Contractually. Yeah. Okay.
I don't want to, you know.
Just to clear the air when it happened. It happened on
a little late for you, huh? Is that what you're saying?
No.
You had to wait a little while?
Earlier than some others may say.
Okay.
Who says she'll watch over you with her Care Bear stare to Marissa?
Seth.
Good. There you go.
Oh, and one more. Who says your mom has to wake up and be Julie Cooper every morning? That's punishment enough.
Ryan?
Jimmy.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Well, you knew that.
We skipped that scene. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You knew that.
I knew that. Can edit that out, please.
And do you remember the name of the club in L.A.?
Oh, yeah.
For the LA?
Lunar Chicks. Luna Chicks.
Very good.
There you go.
Because it was a play on another club at the time.
Yeah.
Oh.
Not Crazy Girl. No.
No.
Not the strip club, Josh. No. Different story.
Okay. What drink does Seth order for himself and Summer in The Gamble?
Shirley Temple?
No, but like, sure. Mountain Dew.
No.
Whatever.
That's it.
Yeah. Speaking of strip, we talked about the strip club with Brody in Vegas.
Oh God.
Wasn't it that you wanted to get Adam a stripper and I was like, absolutely not. And then we got you a stripper.
I did not want to get Adam a stripper.
You did.
No. First of all, why are we talking about this? Second of all, I was sitting there minding my own business and a woman accosted me and started, you know, like grinding on me, and I was so uncomfortable, and I look over and you guys are all laughing.
Oh, dying
of laughter, and the my discomfort, like the greater my discomfort, the more enjoyable. You guys enjoyed it.
Yes.
I was just, this was not my.
Yeah, we got you a stripper. There was talks of getting Adam one, and I lost my shit. I was like, absolutely not. That's not happening. And then
that part I don't remember, but I do remember being incredibly uncomfortable.
Which always brings me the most joy.
Yes.
Didn't I make you write me into the Vegas episode so I could go with you guys to Vegas?
Yeah, that tracks.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that was pretty tacked on there.
Yep.
And then you figured out how to get yourself to Miami.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even work in Miami, but I got myself there.
Yeah, you had a plane flying over the head promoting your appearance at a club.
Is that what happened?
Yes. You got paid to go. You went to a club. We walked into the club. It was insanity. And the promoters were like, we haven't seen, because we all walked in. It was like all you guys.
Yeah.
And the place went, it was like a little scary. And Jamie King was with us and whatnot.
Okay.
So then
I got myself there.
But I do remember checking into the hotel and just looking out the window being like, Miami, and seeing like a plane fly overhead with a banner saying Rachel Bilson will be at this nightclub.
Oh, the days. Oh, my God.
Yeah. For a buck.
Well, this has been so much fun.
So much fun.
Good job, guys. You made it.
We did.
Do you think we're doing? I think we're doing better.
I think you should write a pilot in between the start of season two. Do another podcast.
In four days.
Watch that Heart of Dixie podcast in between and see what it's like. Lila.
Yeah. Little Gerst.
Thank you guys for having me back.
Yay.
You'll be back again. Don't worry.
Yeah. There's a couple more I want to talk about.
Thank you, Josh Schwartz. And we will be right back with Jem. That was so much fun. Catching up with Josh Schwartz and the finale. 27 episodes. Can you believe we've done that many, Rachel?
No, I feel like we actually did them like we did when we were acting them. I'm exhausted.
Well, we have a guest, a very special guest in honor of the finale. Everyone, she did the beautiful, amazing cover of Maybe I'm Amazed, the Paul McCartney song, at Julie and Caleb's wedding. Everyone, the beautiful musician, singer, and mom, Jem, is joining us. How are you?
I'm your wedding singer. I was your wedding singer. Right.
You look a lot better than Adam Sandler, I have to say.
Yes. Thank you. I appreciate that. I was going to say I was honored because I had two songs in the episode.
That's right.
Which is crazy.
You did. You had two songs in the finale of The OC, the first season. And honestly, like, I was so in love and still am so in love with your music. And we were so honored that you were a part of the show. And you actually came on to sing on the show.
I remember meeting you, actually.
I remember meeting you, too.
You were so nice.
Oh, I felt the same way.
it was so sweet. And also, what was funny was coming from... you know, the UK, I don't know if you know this, but Alan Dale was like huge on this huge soap opera when I was young.
Oh, no
Neighbours.
Way.
So it's hilarious. So I remember, I think he was there when I met you and I was like, it's Jim from Neighbours. It was really funny. Like it was kind of a big
was
deal.
I in character or was I nice?
No, I don't know if we met actually. I think that you were in character and actually like acting. No. Like I don't think we actually met. I think, you know,
I definitely remember. And, you know, we were just reflecting on the fact that the wedding, you know, the final episode is less about the wedding and more about these characters. It's a very serious episode. So I didn't have that much to do except for dressing up in a beautiful Vera Wang dress and
yeah, and that
and
beautiful
pretty.
Church.
Yeah.
But so, you're singing at such a pivotal moment of the episode, and you know it was just so beautiful, beautifully shot, and your performance and everything else. And do you remember like what it was like being there and performing? Was it your first time doing that on a show, or
actually, it might have been my first time. And I think in some ways it was kind of lucky that I didn't know. Because I was just moving to LA then, and maybe it came out like a different time in the UK, but I didn't realize how huge it was. I think I would have been way more nervous, you know, but I knew it was a big show, but I hadn't, you know, been caught up in the whole thing. And so it was actually nice that I wasn't super nervous and could enjoy it, you know?
Yeah.
That was cool. But I do remember them saying, this is your, right, this is Jem's shot and we're just going to zoom in, you know? And I was like, okay. I get this right. And actually, I remember a lot of you, you know, just everyone was so nice. I remember Peter coming out and being like Life and Soul and, you know,
oh, that's
Tate
good.
And everyone. Yeah,
yeah.
That was fun.
We spoke with Alexandra Patsavas and asked her about the process of, you know, picking a song and picking an artist, and they chose you. Do you remember being approached and how that process worked?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I love, Alex is amazing. And I do remember, the strange thing is I'm a massive Lennon McCartney fan and Beatles, and actually I nicked my dad's record.
Ooh,
so
nice
I have that
one.
In my studio. But I know. But but I hadn't heard that song. It's really bizarre. And so
really?
We had a phone call with really weird. So I had a phone call with Josh and I think Stephanie and maybe Alex. I think it was either two of them, three, and Josh was definitely on there. And obviously it's a while ago. And again, mom brain. So, but I remember they, you know, asked if I would do that song. And then I have to say, you know, I like to like all the music I make, but there's something really special about that song when I hear it. I don't know if it's because it's tied in with the show or just sometimes certain songs feel like they have this kind of magic in them. And that one really does feel like special, you know? So I do remember, but I wouldn't have known it. It's very strange, but
wow.
I love it now.
Oh, wow.
That is the only recorded version of you singing that song that exists. Is that correct?
It is. And funnily enough, I feel like it got put on a B-side or some release CD back then.
Right.
Something. But I know that I feel like there's a lot of YouTube things and it's got the talking like it was from the show.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I think, yeah, I don't know what... I don't know, music industry, who knows why or what, but yeah, it is obviously recorded, but that's the one I think that's online. And so it's kind of fun because it's always got, you know,
right.
Marissa and, you know,
yeah,
I love having
you.
That moment.
Yeah, and Ryan,
yeah,
such
I know
a moment.
Why you have to do this.
Oh,
I love you.
But I understand.
But I understand.
Yeah.
Oh,
no,
gosh.
It was, and also I remember, this is kind of funny trivia, but I remember distinctly recording it and back then, so we recorded the music. Yoad my co-producer. He's amazing. And he actually played all the instrumentation. And specifically, there's a really interesting instrument in the bridge and throughout the song called a rubab. This is kind of funny. And it's like an ancient Middle Eastern instrument because he's from Israel. And so in his studio, he always had crazy, amazing instruments behind him. And we'd be making songs and we'd say, should we pick up the saz or the stick? And he got this rubab. And it's like, we actually shipped it over for the, it's in there by it's, the piano, if you look like carefully.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so that's what, you know, it's like, I guess, you know, very traditional Middle Eastern music. And I think China and India and Kashmir, a place like that. So
I'm going to listen.
Kind of fun that
yeah,
that
more carefully.
Tune. Yeah.
Did you say that you hadn't seen the show before? And if before you,
I hadn't,
I hadn't really.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it. And funny enough, I'd moved to LA when it was released, like just moved. I think I came over for that trip. And then I was like, I'm going to move to LA. And I literally knew one person. So when it was out, they were in Silver Lake and I was Santa Monica. And I this is so kind of funny and weird, but I just remember biking to Baja Fresh and getting dinner and then watching it like on my own in this rental and just being like, this is crazy. But it was very fun.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That is really fun.
I'm sure you guys had massive, you know, celebration parties watching that one, but it was
I don't know. We were trying to remember our Rap Party season one. We can't remember, so I guess we did party kind of hard.
I think, yeah. No, I think we did. We did have a definite rap party. There's always some fun stories from those things.
Yes.
Yeah. But did you continue to watch the show after?
You know what? I didn't, but only because I got, that was kind of when things were really kicking off.
Oh, yeah.
And it's I'm actually catching up now, which is really funny
because really?
It's so long after. Yeah, yeah. Well, because I've been listening to your podcast and watching it. But no, I think I just was literally on tour and it, you know what I mean? It was like that time where it's kind of go time. And I think I missed like loads of shows at the time. People were like, did you see this? There's it just, yeah. So
yeah, you were
I'm
saying,
very late on, very what? Late on it, but you're all great in it.
Aww.
It's really funny to watch now.
Thanks.
What was the reaction from audiences or fans that you already had, or did you gain more fans?
Presuming I got more fans from it. I mean, it was great exposure. And I just feel like people really love that song. And actually, I was on tour like with Gavin DeGraw, I think it was. And I actually got an email to my tour manager asking if I would help someone propose to that song.
Oh.
And so we actually did like a, it was like at this big college stadium and they put a spotlight and I sang the song to this couple. He proposed in front of everybody.
Oh my gosh.
So that was really fun. Yeah, I know. It's weird, right? How it kind of continues on these things.
Yeah. I've heard that your version is a very popular wedding song.
Oh, really?
Yes. Quite a few.
That's really funny. Yeah. I'm wondering if, like, so I'm starting a podcast too and I have to get some top tips. But I wonder if I'll ever get to speak to McCartney and see if he's heard it. You always wonder with cover versions, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you'll
be amazing.
You'll have to get him on. So you're starting a podcast. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
It's called It's Amazing. And it's because I obviously love music. It's about the amazingness of music and, you know, how it shapes you throughout your life because it's so impactful, you know? So basically interviewing lovely, talented people like yourselves and going through music that you remember from, you know, when you were young, like, I don't know, what you maybe sang into your hairbrush in front of the mirror when you were 12.
Yeah.
Anything?
Paula
Abdul.
Think of anything? Paula Abdul, for sure.
Exactly. But also like new music discovery, you know, so like wedding songs, breakup, like, I don't know if you have songs that specifically remind you of the OC time or helped you do good work. Like I'll listen to things before I go on stage, like Lauryn Hill, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like sharing with people or people sharing these impactful songs that have kind of shaped their life. And then people listening can hear.
We love that.
New music, which is kind of fun. You
yeah,
know?
For sure. We were just talking about it actually with Josh about how the music really brings back all these memories and the music of that time on the show. And yours included, you know, really take you back and how impactful it was. So that sounds like a really fun podcast and I'm totally into
it. Actually, it's funny. In your show, like as an example, I guess, I heard Iron and Wine in this episode. And whenever I hear his voice, because it's so beautiful, it's funny because that was our wedding song was Such Great Heights by Iron and Wine. I don't know if you know that song.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So the Postal Service cover. So that was our wedding song. But, you know, things like that you wouldn't know or like, I don't know.
I love that.
And a lot of your music has been used in multiple shows, Grey's Anatomy. I mean, the list is quite large. Is that really important for an artist? Did you find that that was very, very helpful, the exposure? We were kind of exploring that with Alex as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Funnily enough, I think I came right at a time where just before that, it was sort of frowned upon, and commercials, anything like that was like quite frowned upon. And then it just kind of exploded and it was amazing. And actually, I have to say that was one of my favorite things with the, you know, you'd wake up and check your email and I was very fortunate to have quite a lot of things. And it would just say, you know, yeah, Grey's Anatomy or Damages or whoever, you know, it's a lovely to see your song in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I had my very, very first one before I even had a record deal on KCRW, Adrian Lyne, the director who
was
Unfaithful. Like I heard that he put it in and then it dropped out, but I heard it had gone and I was like, oh my God. You know? But I think just because I love film and TV as well so much that the marriage of, I mean, it's so important, you know, the music is really important part of the, you know, the whole process.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. It's part of the journey. It's part of letting the audience know what's going on. It evokes mood, sad, happy in so many ways. And well, we're looking forward to your podcast. It's amazing. And then your website, it's amazing.world. And people can subscribe now.
Thanks for reminding me.
Right. So tell us about the website too.
Well, it's kind of like a sister thing to the podcast, whereby the guests will be asked at the end about three amazing things that they love, you know. And it kind of started off being apparent that I was always Googling products and things, you know, like non-toxic this and that. And of course, you're so tired and you don't have time. And I thought if I shared this, it'd be really helpful. And then I just thought, well, actually, it's kind of cool. You know, when you Google anything, often now it'll say 20 TV stands or, you know, there's like too many. So I thought it'd be really nice to have guests share things that they really love that you would be telling people anyway. You know, literally it could be, I mean, it literally could be anything. It could be a lamp.
Well, you know? I love that.
Or your shoes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Your favorite Band-Aid.
Right, exactly. Or like I've got, you know, kids' scooters or whatever it is. Like I'm only thinking of kids' stuff now. But things that are functional, like I was asking a friend and he was like, oh, well, you know, this guitar and my gym straps that he hangs upside down helps his back, you know. But just kind of interesting people giving those. And then on top of that, we want to recommend you know, like a movie of the week, something that's positive, because the whole thing is supposed to be like making you feel good. And just, I think it's just going to grow from there.
We look forward to all of that. And yes, I would love to return the favor and talk about my favorite music.
Yeah. Absolutely. I have so many ideas already. I'm like, oh my, because you know how much music really impacts your life. But yes, I look forward to it.
Oh, cool. Okay, let's do it.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us. And it's so nice to see you again.
I know. Thanks for having me. This might be my first podcast.
So what? Oh, wow.
So I think so. Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Very cool.
And also, I guess a podcast exclusive. I'm actually going to go back in the studio in January. And that's when that's when the podcast is launching in January. But I'm going to go back in. So there'll be some new music next year, which I haven't told anyone yet. So there you go.
Congratulations. Awesome. We look forward to that.
Yes, absolutely.
I just wanted to leave you guys with this. Good job with season one.
Oh, thanks.
Oh,
what? Wait. Oh, we're doing something? There's a video? Oh, Lord.
Growing up in Orange County.
I grew up in Orange County. Here, I know for all the listeners who think it's funny how many times I say that I'm from Orange County.
I cried a lot. I cry every episode. No, of course I have no idea.
What happens?
Gosh. I can't remember. I don't remember that, but I believe it. Adam, I don't remember.
I made a big point of saying, you know, I'm from Orange County. Because I grew up in Orange County.
I don't remember things well.
I don't know anything until I watch it.
Never knew that either.
No, Mindy can attest that I don't remember anything.
I cried. I may have teared.
You too.
A few tears.
That's great. Follow, rate, and review. Welcome to the OC Bitches. Wherever you listen to your podcast.
And if you like watching us, check us out on YouTube, HBO Max. And maybe next week your feet will reach the ground?
Nope, that's never going to happen.
Never.
Thanks for
happen.
Listening, everybody.
Bye, bitches.
Bye.
When Shopify says you can sell anywhere, they mean it. Woo, hold up. Just got a new sale. Whoa, Shopify doesn't mind if you're at sea level. Or on top of the world.
Whether you're selling carabiners or crop tops, start selling with Shopify today and join the platform simplifying commerce for millions of businesses worldwide. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a free trial at shopify.com/podcast22. Shopify.com/podcast22.
Hi, everyone. It's Rabia Chaudhry.
And I'm Ellen Marsh.
And we have a new podcast called Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case. As you know, I am a very smart lawyer.
You are. You're so well-respected in the entire world. You know everything.
Thank you so much.
And as you know, I'm a famous Broadway star. Gorgeous. I sing like a nightingale.
Well, yes. At least that's what your mom says. Just kidding. This is Ellen Marsh. And
that's I'm Rabia
Chaudhry. But we are teaming up to bring you a show like you have never heard before.
True crime meets talk show. Nobody's done it. We're going to do it. We're going to do the impossible. And it's the two things that I love. Ellen, I think you'll like it too.
What? True crime and talking?
Yeah.
I'm there. Every other week, we will have a guest talking about whatever true crime case they are obsessed with. We have a list, everything from the Lacey Peterson murder.
Yeah, some of the most famous cases you've ever heard of, obviously, like JonBenet Ramsey, the West Memphis Three.
Chris Watts, Khalif Browder.
Elisa Lamb, Madeleine McCain.
Sandra Bland, the Springfield Three. The list goes on and on. But they are all cases that you know, and we are going to dive in deep with someone else and just talk about them.
No, we're going to solve the case, Ellen.
That's right. We're going to solve the case. So subscribe to Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case wherever you get your podcasts.